Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Say big on your landscaping project now at Menards. We make it easy for you to enhance your outdoor living space with the largest in-stock selection of concrete landscape block ready to take home today. Build a fire pit or retaining wall with our tumbled Belgian wall blocks. On sale now. Save big on your landscaping project at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Becker on Darren, Donick, and Chase on this Wednesday morning. Hope everybody's having a good day. ESPN 102.5 The Game. We say hello to Pete Weber, fine voice, the longtime voice of the Nashville Predators for the last 22 years over on the radio side, the radio network with us on 102.5 The Game. Pete, how you doing?
I'm doing well, guys. How about yourselves?
Well, doing same thing we've been doing for almost the last 2 months.
I miss you, Pete.
Yeah.
How about you and Claudia? What have you guys been doing? Going ape?
Well, Claudia still, yeah, we go ape, but Claudia still goes to work 3 days a week at Catholic Charities.
Okay.
And so that helps her with her sanity, and not to mention helps the community out as she goes to work to help everybody. And it all began, really, it was, if you will, in quotation marks, only the aftermath of the tornadoes in early March. And then, of course, COVID-19.
You know, it was interesting. We started off the show talking about 22 years ago today was the Kerry Wood performance against the Astros, and I remember being at the box seat in Green Hills, and I said, you know, that was also the lead up to the inaugural season for the Predators. Well, ironically, it was 2 days before that Kerry Wood pitching performance that the NHL awarded the Predators their franchise and announced that they would be indeed the 27th team in the league. What do you remember about that 1998 season getting ready for that first ever year?
Well, number one, I didn't know for sure I was going to be here until some point around mid-August of 1998. Indeed, I was working for Empire Sports Network covering the NHL draft and the expansion draft, which stocked the Predators at the building in Buffalo in 1998. I remember walking into the building that day with Claudia, and she nudged me in the ribs, I think broke two of them with that nudge, and said, look over there, there's Bobby Orr. And I go, yes, he's an agent now, so that's okay. So finding out in August, and then the accelerated get after it and be ready, and then I got here in time for the first day of the first training camp, which was September 12th. Of 98. 1 week from that day, we were down at the Von Braun Center in Huntsville, Alabama, and the Predators were playing their first preseason game against the Florida Panthers, and I had a real good glimpse of what that season would be like, with Patrick Cote having three bouts that night with Peter Worrell of the Florida Panthers.
Gosh, I didn't realize you were not here till late. I mean, I knew the Crispy story. In fact, Terry told it to us a couple of weeks ago. I didn't realize you didn't get here till later than that. Huh.
Oh, yeah, the same thing happened with Dan Dupa of the Vegas Golden Knights. His timing was maybe even a little bit later than mine. So when you're putting a new team together, your broadcasters are not the top priorities. You're trying to find guys who could play the game.
I learned something new today. Pretty cool. Had Todd a chance to talk with Jordan Tutu last night on game night.
Mm-hmm.
That was a lot of fun on Facebook Live and just kind of going down memory lane with him. I also learned something last night that I had not heard. It's pretty interesting that I'm learning stuff that I'd heard all these stories, but yet I'm learning new things. He told me last night that he initially was set to sign with the New York Rangers before Ken Holland picked up the phone and I guess called his agent last minute, said, wait a minute, we've got a better offer. And that's how he ended up in Detroit. I don't think I had ever heard that before, unless I forgot it. I don't remember that he was about to sign with the Rangers before he ended up signing with Detroit because they gave, you know, they came in with a better deal. Did you know that? Have you heard that?
Yeah, I had heard that, but I got to tell you, Ken Holland was great for those last-minute offers. If you take a look at some of the things that have been on NHL Network lately, he did the very same thing to prevent Brett Hull from joining the Montreal Canadiens and instead come on with that star-studded, I think, 8 or 9 Hall of Famers on the 2002 Red Wings.
You know, I talked to him about that first-ever playoff because what that meant, you know, to this city, that 03-04 season and that first time the puck was dropped against the Red Wings in Game 3 and what that atmosphere was like and what it meant early on as the Predators, you know, what it meant to this franchise, because as a new franchise, they didn't have the luxury like Vegas had, or they didn't have the luxury that probably Seattle is going to have of, you know, building yourself a powerhouse where you can just jump right in there and be contenders right away. It took time, and what it was like to finally get to that point. And of course, their first 4 playoff appearances, you know, they just couldn't get past Detroit and San Jose in that first round. So it was kind of the slow build, which is not what we're accustomed to today. Everybody wants the fast build. But what were those times like for the franchise and trying to break through? But what it meant, those early playoff series, to the fan base?
Well, you remember what it was like. It took 3 or 4 years for the team to finally even be able to score 200 goals in a season.
Yeah.
So it was just trying to build up the offensive depth or give a chance to youngsters who could help develop that for you. So it was more than a little bit frustrating, but you understood. There was not the mindset of the fast build at that point in time. The quickest build we can really remember would have been the Florida Panthers in their 3rd season going to the Stanley Cup Final. Though they got swept by the Colorado Avalanche, including a triple overtime final. But for the most part, let's think about the Philadelphia Flyers. Terry Crisp, Philadelphia Flyers. He goes there in the 72-73 season, and then the next year they win a Stanley Cup in the 7th year. The New York Islanders started in 72-73, won a cup in 1980. That was the sort of build time that was required. Let's face it, the Kings never got to a Stanley Cup final until 1993, and they started in 1967-68. So slow builds had been the whole theme of putting together an NHL franchise and getting it going.
And then finally the breakthrough, right? The Anaheim Ducks, they get it done in that 2010 season, 2010-2011 season, and they break through and push through to the second round. What, you know, for all the fans that have been there from the beginning and waited for that moment, what was that like?
Well, that was one of the few times I had prepared something to say at the end of the series. Because I really don't like that, but I felt that it was sort of like the Rocky story. So when they knocked off the Ducks, I just called out, "Yo, Adrian, they did it." And it was like one of those, and here's the thing that made it so fitting. The guys involved in the overtime victory and the overtime winner, how about that, Jordan Tutu and Jared Spiffer?
Yeah.
It wasn't any of the so-called offensive stars of the team at that time, but what Barry Trotz would refer to as the hod carriers, the guys who did the work in the trenches, who were able to come up with a bit of the glory.
And then we had Joe Ward on last week after he put out on the Players Tribune that he was officially hanging things up, and I know he hasn't been in the league for the last year and a half, but just kind of going down memory lane with him. What a good guy. What a fun guy to be around. And, you know, was no surprise to see all of his former teammates and people who covered him come out and say all the nice things that they did about Joe Ward.
Well, he deserved them. He deserved them big time. I was on a podcast in San Jose yesterday reminiscing about Joel and what he did here. And I think that's intriguing in that each of his alma maters, though he didn't spend much time in the Minnesota Wild organization, but each of them, when you talk about Washington, San Jose, Nashville, all came to love and adore the guy. And what we saw he did with the Big Brother program with Malik here in town and watching over him even after he left as a free agent to make sure he got through and included his high school education at Lighthouse Christian School. I think that was a fantastic tribute, not just to Malik, but also to Joel Ward. And Joel, I think, can carry his head high for what he accomplished. When you consider it was almost an accident that he became a Predator. Predators pro scouts were taking a look at another player, Ryan Jones, who was playing in the Minnesota Wild farm system, and all of a sudden, what Joel Ward accomplished on the ice raised the Predator scouts' eyebrows big time.
Wow, Ryan Jones. I hadn't heard that name in a long time.
It's been a while.
Yeah.
And they did get Ryan Jones.
I was
going to
say, they ended
too,
up getting right? Ryan Jones, yeah.
they got Ryan Jones, but coincident with all of that, they also signed Joel Ward. It's kind of like, if you want me to get Scotty Bowman going sometime, talk about what all the scouts were doing going up to Parry Sound, Ontario, looking at two other players before this skinny little defenseman named Orr caught their eye.
Well, we know how that turned out for sure. We're talking to Pete Weber.
Coming up, coming up is the anniversary, May 10th, of Bobby Orr goes flying through the air.
Yeah, we're getting right there, aren't we? Somebody's going to be calling Crispy to get his story, right?
Oh, yeah.
So, Pete, I want to hit you up on a couple of moments in time that we've been bringing up. So let's go back before, or maybe as the Predators and this next wave of expansion in the league was being talked about. We're talking about 96, 97, where Nashville is given the first team, but it's a group of four teams coming in: Columbus, Nashville, Minnesota, and Atlanta. You had been through a recent round of that. The league had gone through it with Ottawa and San Jose and Anaheim. So give me, at the time, your thoughts when the league was going to go to four more teams. Did you think they were ready for it? What were your concerns? And when you heard Nashville was going to get a team, what did you think?
Well, number one, I thought that Atlanta had a bad rap put on it when the Flames left. It was simply a case of Alberta money, oil money, was able to buy the Flames and pick them up and move, much to the chagrin of defenseman of the Flames, Brad Marsh, who thought he was set for life because he married the owner's daughter, Tom Cousins. And then Columbus was always written up. And even, now, not that he was the great guy who would cover sports for you, but James Michener wrote a book in the early 70s, Sports in America, and pointed out that Columbus, Ohio, was the potential of a burgeoning major league sports market. So I took him at his word, and I have seen, I think, the backing the Blue Jackets have had since they came into being 2 years after the Predators. And then there was no question that Minnesota got a bad deal as well. When we first saw the media guides in the fall of, 92, that they no longer said North Stars on them, just said the Minnesota Stars, we saw something was up, and, of course, the next year they ended up being moved to Dallas when the owner at the time, Norm Green, found out he could charge double what he did in Minnesota for tickets in Dallas and still get just as many purchasers. So I thought the four territories were ripe for this. I like the idea that the Predators got started so that what ultimately became the Titans, started out as the Tennessee Oilers, did not have a stronghold on the market by themselves. And I thought that was a very good move.
Another thing we talked about was, in light of The Last Dance with Michael Jordan, we were talking about the limelight and how big a star Michael Jordan was compared to everybody else. And Charles Barkley put him and Tiger Woods above everybody else. But sort of paint the picture, if you will, Pete, because you have ties in L.A. and you know this league so well, how great Gretzky's star was at its height. I mean, we know still today, I mean, if he goes anywhere, especially in the hockey world, we know what the reaction is going to be. But at his height, how close do you think he was to Jordan, Tiger Woods?
Well, let's just take, for example, as soon as he got traded in August of 88, how many U.S. commercials he was a part of. 7-Up was the first one that comes to mind. Doing that, that was the perfect market for him to go. And had he not gone there, Willie, I'm willing to argue you and I and Darren and Chase would not be here talking about Nashville Predators, because he showed that hockey could work in the Sun Belt. And that is, you know, that's how the Ducks came into being, because they saw that there was room for more in Southern California. Ultimately, how the Guns decided to give up their franchise in Minnesota and go on to San Jose. And Florida comes in along with the Ducks. Tampa Bay had come in beforehand along with the Ottawa Senators. Wayne Gretzky's impact on this league, just by the presence of these franchises, is still being felt. And we all know what his presence is still rather prominent in the NHL record book.
Oh, yeah. No question about it. Pete, here's another historical perspective for you. You got me thinking with your reference to James Minchner, because I was reading an article about Don Shula where apparently one time the owner brought James Minchner into the locker room as a guest. So James Minchner writes books. He's not a sports reporter. And Don
Long
Shula
books.
Still threw him out. Yeah, he threw him out of the locker room just because he was a writer. But you saw a lot of Don Shula in the battles between the Bills teams that you covered and his Dolphins teams. Yeah, give us your perspective on Don Shula.
He was always open to members of the media asking him questions. I always look forward to the Wednesdays during the Dolphin weeks, because we would have great conference calls with Don Shula. Very enjoyable. And here was a guy who then changed with the times. Obviously, he had to. Now, here's the best Don Shula mention I've seen in a long time. The other day, just within hours after we learned of his death, someone wrote, "Here's a man who just passed away who coached against George Halas and Bill Belichick." I mean, think about that.
Wow.
Now, that's a tribute in many ways to the longevity of George Halas. But still, he coached against the two of them. Tie those together. I mean, that's like when you put Stan Musial together with Ty Cobb and Pete Rose. The bridge is there that existed statistically. But Shula loved the game, and he wanted it to succeed. And so if you remember those Dolphins Super Bowl teams, they were a hard-running group. Bob Greasy might throw as few as 7 passes in a game, but with Zonka and with Kick, they were moving the ball largely on the ground. And then all of a sudden, 1983, that draft, he gets a kid named Marino, and all of a sudden he pairs him up with Duper and Clayton, and he's moving the ball through the air, and in large chunks through the air. So he adapted to what became of the game and played a large role in when they liberalized the rules on blocking, number one, and then on contact with receivers, number two. He was able to be at the forefront of all of that.
It's still one of the craziest stats I think I've ever seen. When I was a kid, I remember looking. I wasn't old enough to watch those great Dolphins teams of the early 70s, but I remember looking at the football register and looking in the Super Bowl stats and seeing that Bob Greasy in the second Super Bowl, not the one that they went undefeated, but the year after, they beat the Vikings, and he was 6-for-7 passing. He threw 7 passes in the Super Bowl, and they won easy.
Easily, yes, sir. Absolutely. And I spent many conversations with Bob Greasy later on in his broadcasting career talking about that. But he would always first shake his head when I approached him. He goes, "I'm not going to talk about the Notre Dame-Purdue game, okay?"
Pete Weber is with us, the voice of the Nashville Predators, and enjoying some of the stories that you're telling about the early days of the Predators. I remember that playoff series against Anaheim where they finally broke through and your call. But was there a moment, maybe in the first 2-3 seasons, that you're sitting there in the broadcast booth next to Crispy and you just have that moment of, this might actually work, that this is going to work here in Nashville, that the fans are buying in?
Actually, you know, in many ways, it even goes to the first game How about the team had not played a game yet in the building at 501 Broadway? All the preseason games were on the road purposely. And then before the first face-off, and as the first face-off in Predators history is unveiling, there's a standing ovation. I mean, that gave me an inkling of what was to happen. And then that Easter Sunday afternoon in 2004, the first home playoff game, and here we are in the Bible Belt, and they said, nobody's going to show up on Easter Sunday for a hockey game in Nashville, Tennessee. Well, that still might have been one of the loudest times I can ever recall in that building.
Yeah, that was a fun one. And we got to air that game recently through all of this. And it was I actually was the one that edited it and put it all together. And it was neat going down memory lane listening to that. So you're the perfect person.
You got all of my curses out of there. I did.
Yeah, we got everything out of there. I wasn't really worried about you. I was worried about Crispy. but we got it all out of there. You're the perfect person to ask this question to. Ryan Porth and I had this discussion on our show, The Rundown, on Preds Insiders yesterday. You know, with The Last Dance being out, and so everybody's kind of in that documentary mode. If you were to make a 30 for 30 type documentary on something involving the Nashville Predators, what would be the first thing that you would want to see made?
I think one aspect of it should at least be the telephone call in the summer of 2005 that David Poile received from Don Baisley, the agent for Paul Kariya, that he wanted to sign here. That was sort of the inverse of your typical recruiting free agent pitches to get that and then start out with David as he was building the franchise, because I think that was what began to put the team at the top. When you have a player of that caliber looking to come and play for you rather than you know, jetting around the country and pursuing him and or his agent, I think that would be a huge part of it.
Yeah, that would be interesting, because that's one of the moments we always point to that changed everything. Because if Paul Kariya doesn't sign here, and maybe if he doesn't sign here in the manner in which he did, you know, who knows what this looks like. But to me, that was that was when I really started to pay attention more. I mean, I remember Tutu's debut and that being such a big deal, and kind of keeping up with things, the first playoff, you know, run and first playoff appearance. But you know, I as a novice hockey fan knew who Paul Kariya was, and when he signed here, that was what got people's attention. So I think that would be a good one. One that I suggested too was just the first game, you know, just leading up to the first game in 1998 and everything, all the stories involved with that, I think would be cool.
It was a fantastic time. I'd always wanted to be in on the birth of a franchise, and as it turned out, I looked into a pretty good one.
Yes, you did. We could also do one on Crispy and soccer kicks.
Well, that one probably would have to be on a special pay channel so as to make sure we can filter out some aspects of his response.
HBO.
Seeing such things. Yep.
Pete, leave us with this, and I know you don't have the answer, but I just want to get your thoughts. What's your opinion? Where do you think we thought we were going to learn something from the kind of the Board of Governors meeting, but really no news came out. So where do you think this is truly headed? Because baseball, the NBA, and the NHL has been a little bit quiet here of late. What do you think's going on behind the scenes, in your opinion?
Yeah, and for that matter, today MLS teams were allowed to reopen their facilities. And what is it, Friday still for the NBA? Is that what they're going
Yes.
at?
Yep.
I really think this is the holding pattern still, and waiting to see essentially what the CDC has to say, because we're reliant upon their advice and their guidance, and then how local governments respond to that. Because I've not, you know, I can't imagine that we are going to be flying to New York or any place like that anytime soon. And then, isn't it eerie to watch the Korean baseball on ESPN in the middle of the night and to see the games with no one in the stands And knowing that Carl Ravitch, working those games, realizes that he's almost like a reporter on the 18th green at Augusta National. You're almost whispering to call all the action. But I think we just have to be patient, and it's not easy to be right now, to stand by, wait, and see when we do. And I'm going to say when, not if. We are going to get a go-ahead at some point in time. But what will that be like? And do any of your listeners have any recommendations for books on the 1918-1919 pandemic that hit this country? Because I would really like to get into that. And that was the last time, really, without a labor dispute, that the Stanley Cup was not awarded.
Somebody sent me a picture this morning. People in attendance of baseball games in those times were wearing masks, ironically.
Yeah, and I got one on Twitter, too, from a football stadium in Georgia from 1919.
Now, they weren't practicing social distancing, but they were wearing masks.
No, they were right next to each other.
They were right next to each other.
If I could zoom it out, if I could see someone trying to smoke a cigar through the mask, but I didn't.
Pete, continue to go ape. Thanks for joining us. Always good to talk to you, and hopefully we'll see you soon.
Guys, thank you very much, and I know it's difficult, and some of you have pets around the house, and you have to pay attention to them. If not, certain tragedy can result. And if anybody in East Nashville can drop off a supply of plastic cups at the Donick household, I think that would be recommended.
There you go.
We lost another one yesterday, Pete. We lost another glass yesterday.
No. Yep. How many? What's the count?
Another casualty. Overall, the last year or so, he's got six or seven, at least, big glass cups, glasses, tumbler, you know, whatever we like to use, ice water glasses and stuff.
Yeah.
The mason jars, they're gone. They're gone. So Evans Donick upstairs left the glass out on the dresser, and sure enough, Stanley got to it, knocked it over, boom, gone.
Well, it's not Stanley's cup.
Stanley.
He almost got two yesterday. He had a wine glass in his sights. I had to pop up from the couch. I was really comfortable on the couch, just relaxing, and I had to pop up with a reflex and sprint over before he knocked that bad boy over.
Wow.
I'm going right now on Amazon ordering a group of plastic cups for the Donick household.
Thank you, Pete.
You have
a great day.
With your dog, do you? Okay, be good, guys.
All right, Pete Weber. Stanley is a troublemaker.
No doubt about it.
There is big news coming from East Tennessee. We'll tell you about it. To finish up hour number one, that'll be a perfect lead-in to Joe Rexroad to kick off hour number two. That's coming up next on Darren, Donick, and Chase. ESPN 102.5, The Game.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.